not good enough that any patient should receive a service that's less than acceptable, and I would fully accept that on this occasion any patient who's had an unacceptable wait in our emergency department or who's had a less than satisfactory experience, it is unacceptable. There is unprecedented pressure, and I'm happy to talk about that in a minute, but I fully recognise that's absolutely no consolation to any individual who's had to experience something that's less than satisfactory, clearly.
You know, Seamus, I'm not here to kind of get stuck in this morning or knock you, but we are going round and round in circles in that the public are coming to this programme now, not just about the Ulster Hospital, but about many of our hospitals in Northern Ireland, and it's a common theme.
Sure.
And the common theme is that they're not being treated properly in terms of the amount of time they have to wait and they can't get a bed. And I'd put it to you that the system is cracking now.
Well, I know that our own system is under tremendous pressure. And I know you said in the introduction, Stephen, that we've heard this term unprecedented before.
We have, every winter.
But actually it's not the case that this winter is the same as previous winters. I'm happy to share with you. Each year we see a growth on average of about 2 to 3% demand on our services. In a bad winter we might have 4 or 5% of an increase, but this has been a 15% increase against the same period last year. So this is by far, and I've been in this position for 15 years, the biggest increase in pressure on a hospital that I've ever experienced, and it is clearly unprecedented.
But why?
Why has that been the case?
Yeah.
Well, I think there are probably three main reasons. One, our population, as we all know, is getting bigger and older and getting sicker, unfortunately.
But not in a year, Seamus. There's not a dramatic increase in a year in the size of the population.
That's right. That's one of the reasons. A second reason is that clearly that there has been. So there's been growth within our own trust area, but there's also been changes within the system that we've clearly had to deal with. We've had to plan with those to deal with those changes, but obviously the planning timescale has been shorter than we would have liked, so we have not been able to put all of the capacity in place that we know we need to actually deal with this increased activity.
You haven't been able to put the capacity in place?
Not within the timescale.
So essentially what you're talking about here is the NE closing and at the city?
Well, it's more than just the Belfast City Hospital. There have also been changes at the Down Hospital. As you know, there are some changes on an interim basis at Lagan Valley Hospital. So there are system changes which also bring about more and more demand. But as well as that, we have a population that is getting sicker because for every 3 years of life we have, Stephen, two of those years are going to be spent in ill health. And it's wonderful that life expectancy is increasing, but the demands on health and social care are extreme, to say the least. And I think that's why John Compton's review, Transforming Your Care, is extremely timely, because we can't continue to do the things that we've always done because it's bringing more and more pressure onto our system.
But Seamus, we were assured by the health professionals, we were assured as the public by the experts that when A&Es were closing, because there was public outrage at some of these A&Es closing, and we were assured by the experts that you lot had tabulated it, that you knew what you were doing, that the capacity was there, that these places would be centres of excellence, that you know it was far better to have one place rather than two, no point having two very close together. All of this stuff has been churned out.
Well, from a professional perspective, our organisation is very clear that our outcomes for patients are better, and that by and large the vast majority of our patients get a very good standard of care, and that's a major tribute to the staff we have within our organisation. And whilst I'm speaking about our staff, I think it would be remiss of me not to pay tribute to all of our staff across the Trust, but particularly our staff within the emergency department at the Ulster Hospital, whose dedication and professionalism it never ceases to amaze me, Stephen. They're a fantastic group of staff. I've worked with them for 15 years. We've been through challenging times in the past, as you've mentioned, but never before have we faced this level of pressure. And I think it's important for you to maybe understand what 15% means. 15% means about an extra 80 beds demand on our services. Now, we have been able to open 40 beds, and that wasn't easy. There's a recruitment campaign, there's training of staff, there's estates issues to develop, but we managed to get 40 additional beds open. We knew that that would not be sufficient to address the additional demand. So there are other plans that we have in place which will not deliver out until March time, early April, which will substantially improve our capacity.
So how bad is it at the moment in the Ulster Hospital?
Today?
No.
Or generally?
Generally.
Well, generally, I spent considerable time with the staff on Monday. It's an extremely pressured situation for them.
What does that mean, though? Extremely pressured. What does that mean?
Well, if you have, for example, a ward full of patients effectively in your emergency department, you're not only having the normal flu within the department, you're having to then manage patients who normally would have been upstairs in a medical ward. So you could almost say you've doubled the workload for the team. Now, what we do in that situation is we bring in extra staff. We put in place some interim arrangements, unfortunately, like corridor beds to try and ease the pressure on staff. So there's a pressure on staff. There's an experience for patients which is far from satisfactory.
Absolutely. Would you go as far as to say it's a crisis point?
No, it's not. It's not a crisis. It's a hugely pressured situation whereby where we feel it's getting anyway close to potentially a crisis, we have to do other things. And that's why, for example, the unfortunate decision of placing a patient on a corridor bed becomes a balance of risks for us. We won't allow the department to get to the situation where it is at crisis, so we have to make some very uncomfortable and unsatisfactory decisions, for example, around placing patients on a corridor bed. Now, those decisions are not taken lightly. They're taken on the basis of patient safety, and if the risk is perceived to be greater in the emergency department, then we will place patients on a corridor bed. Now, we try to ensure, and I don't want to talk about an individual case because I don't think that's appropriate, but we try to assure a number of things. For example, it will be a doctor who will make a clinical judgment about whether a patient is suitable to actually lie on a bed in a corridor with screening. We do our best to ensure privacy and dignity for that patient, but we fully acknowledge that it is far from private or dignified for the patient.
Yeah.
We will try to keep that patient in the bed for the shortest possible time. We will try to potentially select a patient who may be due to be discharged the following day. So there are a range of things that we will do.
Yeah, I know you won't talk about individual cases, Seamus, but I will. And this man, there on a Sunday, there all day Monday, land the corridor. You can't find his consultant. He's seriously ill with cancer. It's bone cancer. It's very painful. He's got enough. His family are distraught. Where do they come? They come to us because they've nowhere else to go.
Well, we have a system in place within our organisation, and we would much prefer our families to talk to us so that we have an opportunity then to investigate what the situation is and respond as appropriate. So it's very difficult for me to comment without having done an investigation.
You're the director of hospital services.
Sure.
Are you also shutting down your staff from raising concerns to the media?
With a group of our staff on Monday morning in the emergency department, hearing firsthand from them their concerns.
But have you told your staff not to go to the media because of how concerned they are?
No, we haven't told our staff. I'm not sure where that's come from.
Well, here's someone who's contacted us this morning, and I've got to say it's not isolated. Stephen, I'm a paramedic. We were treating people on stretchers in the Ulster Hospital as they had absolutely no room. We have been told we cannot go on air.
Stephen, maybe just to explain to you, I don't have responsibility for the Northern Ireland Ambulance Service, so that individual will work for a different organisation. I can't comment on that. Clearly, staff are at liberty to speak about their experiences, and we do not stop them from doing so. So I don't know where that's come from insofar as the South Eastern Trust
okay.
is concerned.
You know, there's a growing problem here, isn't there? And it's well beyond your hospital, and we've talked about it before. But at some point, someone's going to have to, unless something changes, Seamus, someone's going to have to stand up and say, do you know what, we've now got a problem.
This is
unacceptable.
Comment, Stephen. I mean, I think that's the whole point of John Compton's review, Transforming Your Care, because it's clear that the current model is not sustainable. We are under huge pressure. I think you made the comment that we're cracking. I think that's not an unreasonable perception. But unless we fundamentally transform what we do, this will be a growing problem because the current model is not sustainable.
So,
we need to spend more time, energy and resources in preventing ill health, in managing patients with chronic conditions.
So when you concede, Seamus, when you concede that your hospital is cracking...
No, I didn't say the hospital's cracking. I said that the system is cracking.
When you concede that the system is cracking,
yep.
What does that mean?
Well, I suppose in any situation you have a pressure build and when you're getting signs that the current system is not able to cope with not just the current increase in demand, but clearly there will be a future increase in pressures, then you need to do something differently. And for example, we will have patients in our hospital who could, if there was a greater build of capacity outside of hospital, could be discharged in a more timely fashion. So there's a real challenge for the whole system to build greater capacity out of hospital to ensure that we can have more timely discharge. I know that we can create the shortage in our medical beds if we had that extra capacity out of hospital that would help us to reduce our length of stay and free up those beds for patients coming in who will still continue to need acute care into the future. But there's a real challenge, and I know Transforming Your Care has clearly identified we need to build up that capacity in the community. We need to find different ways to manage patients at home and reduce their length of stay in hospital, and that's where we need to get to. And for me, you talk about crisis, Stephen, but actually we have come so far in the 20 years that I've worked in the health service. I can go back to when I started my career, and in the area that I work in, there were twice the number of hospital beds treating half the number of people we treat today. So I think it's important to recognise the progress that's been made. Yes, we are extremely challenged. Our staff continue to rise to those challenges. And I can even say that even now, whilst we've had huge pressures on our emergency department, I could actually pay tribute to the staff for the fact that it's not worse than it currently is, because they continue to actually do things to manage patients in a different way.
Here's another text that's come into the programme. Patients are waiting with ambulance crews for 5 hours to hand over to nurses. Patients are being treated on ambulance trolleys. Now, are you aware of the system cracking so much that ambulance crews are having to sit with patients for 5 hours before they can be handed to nurses?
I'm very aware that ambulance turnaround times are not as slick as they should be.
5 hours?
I can't comment on 5 hours because I'm not aware of a five-hour wait, but I am aware that there are challenges for the ambulance service as well. There are more and more...
That's not a challenge for the ambulance service. That's the ambulance service ready to go, ready to hand a patient over, and the system is cracking so much that it's taken 5 hours before a patient can be handed to a hospital. Like, I'm a lay person in this.
Because I'm not aware of that 5 hour time.
Well, you've got to be aware of
that our turnaround times are not as slick as they should be.
So what are the turnaround times at the moment?
Well, turnaround times vary. It depends on the situation. But whenever you've got a perhaps 20 patients plus in the emergency department waiting for admission into a bed, turnaround times might be an hour and a half. And they may be a little bit longer than
that. What should they
be? I'm not aware of a five-hour turnaround time. And what the ambulance service will do is if they see a pressure building in a particular unit, then they will make decisions to divert ambulances elsewhere. So there's a system responding to pressures. And for example, as a simple example, again, to give you an indication of the sorts of pressure we're facing, this time last year, there were 50 ambulances came to the Ulster's emergency department every day. We now are averaging 58 every day. So that's another 16%, which is, again, an indicator of that increase in pressure. So there are not overnight solutions to some of these challenges. Some of the solutions that we need to bring forward can be done in a medium-term basis over months that will help improve the situation. But fundamentally, the system needs to change, and that's what transforming your care is all about.
And I'm hearing that loud and clear. Can I just ask you one final question?
Sure.
And thanks so much for coming on the programme this morning. It's clear that both you and your staff, you're doing your very best, and there is absolutely no one, certainly that I can see, and I'm not suggesting that you're doing anything other than your very, very best. But the odds are being stacked against you at the moment because of the pressure and because of the demand, and we can all see that. Is there a situation, Seamus, because this is what it really comes down to. We're talking here about, you know, people having to sit and wait unacceptable times. And,
sure.
And to a certain extent, you'll say that's unacceptable. I'll agree
with
you.
Well, it is unacceptable. Let me make that very clear.
Yeah, okay, but it's unacceptable, but, you know, it happens and it's happening, and some people will understand that. Are we at a situation yet in which people are at a life or in a life threatened state and the system cannot get to them quick enough?
I don't believe we are. And I know that you've said we've been here before. We have been here before, and I think that sometimes what reassures me that we can continue to rise to the challenge. I can probably go back about 6 or 7 years ago when we were experiencing similar challenges to those we're facing today. But we managed to rise to those challenges.
But when,
again, tribute to our staff, they've actually been able to do that.
But I'm trying to understand how this system is currently working then, for example, at the Ulster.
Sure.
So you've got an A&E department which is overstretched, and you've got nurses in an A&E who are actually treating people in that A&E when actually those people should be up in the wards.
Yep.
So it's not doing what it's designed to do.
No, it's not
right?
During those times.
Okay.
And well, it's not as well as it should be. Patients are still being assessed, treated,
they're being assessed, well. but the system is stretched.
Yeah, it's very stretched.
And you've got people, you know, lying there in A&E, lying in corridors when they should not be there. And the nurses are being stretched in all directions. Now, let's say there is then an incident where someone is in a life-threatened condition and they are brought in, they're rushed into A&E. And you've got a situation where some of the other ambulance staff, rather than being able to go out and pick that person up, rather than being able to rush to a road traffic incident, rather than being able to rush to a 999 call if you take a heart attack, they're sitting with a patient for 5 hours, so they're not free. I'm trying to understand how this is not
to be clear,
putting us at risk.
But our clinical staff make clinical priorities and judgments on a day-and-daily basis.
Only if they've got the time or the space to do so.
Absolutely, but by and large, what can often happen is a number of the patients who require admission to a bed are stabilised. They're not in a life-threatening condition, so we obviously then can turn our resources to those patients who do need all of the attention of our clinicians.
No, Seamus, I still don't understand how if the ambulance staff, for example, are being tied up with a patient well beyond where they should be, because there's not a lot of spare capacity. So if that ambulance person is supposed to be able to hand a patient over within whatever period it is, half an hour, whatever period it is, and actually if it's taken 2 hours and they've got to sit with them because the hospital simply cannot take the patient, cannot cope,
yep.
That's one less ambulance crew to rush out to a major incident.
Yeah, and one of the discussions that we're having at the moment is with the ambulance service, and we're actively pursuing additional crews for the Ulster Hospital so that we can actually discharge our patients in a more timely fashion. So there's a whole system response that needs to take place. But just to be very clear, if there was any patient in an ambulance waiting to offload into the Ulster Hospital's emergency department, a senior clinician will go into that ambulance and triage patients to satisfy themselves that the patient can wait for a little bit of time, or if they're an absolute clinical priority, they will immediately be brought into the emergency department. There is, at all times, a managed system which is prioritising the clinical needs of patients throughout this very pressured situation, and that will always be the case.
But if you're, and final question,
sure.
But again, if, you know, if it's me or my mother or someone I love or anyone that, you know, that's listening in a similar situation, in these wards, there is specialist equipment and there are specialists there. And that's, you know, a hospital places the specialist equipment and the specialists in certain locations. How, again, are we not being put at risk because we're not where we're supposed to be?
Well,
you know, if you're lying in a corridor, you're not close to the centres of excellence, to the equipment.
Well, just to be clear, when we talk about a corridor, can I explain this to you? When we talk about a patient lying in a corridor bed, that bed is beside the nurse's station. This is not some remote place. This is in the corridor, right beside the nurse's station, in the middle of the ward. The issue is not the corridor, Stephen. The issue is that there's not appropriate bed space, bedside table, and the normal screens that any bed would have in a bay in a hospital. That's the bigger issue. This is not a patient safety issue. This is more a privacy and dignity issue. It's not a good experience for patients. But this is not about patient safety when a patient is in a bed on a corridor. I think that everybody needs to be clear about that, what we mean there. This patient is in a bed beside the nurse's station and help is at hand immediately for that patient. So I think it's important to understand what we mean by a corridor bed. It is not somewhere remote down a corridor where there's no staff beside that patient. Obviously, we have 20 bed at wards, and on occasions we go to 21 beds. This is not a huge increase in the pressure on the staff in the wards, albeit it is an extra patient to deal with. So we're not talking about something that's unsafe. We're talking about something that's not a good experience.
And you can guarantee this morning that someone that's taken a heart attack or any of those life-threatening conditions, you can guarantee that they are being treated as quickly as they would have been, say, last year?
Well, all I can say to you is any patient who has a clinical need, that clinical need is being met as a matter of priority and urgency, and it'll be no different today than it was last year, Stephen. What the problem here is...
No, it'll be no different today in terms of, you know, the process. That's what you've just said. The process of they'll be treated in clinical need. But the question, Seamus, was specific.
But their clinical intervention is not being delayed, Stephen. I think that's very important. If that's the point you're trying to make, their clinical intervention is being addressed as a matter of urgency.
No, I've no doubt it's been addressed as a matter of urgency. And again, this isn't me having a go. This is a societal discussion we're having today.
Sure.
You know, whether we start giving you and the health service more resources, you know, maybe whether we start diverting money from other departments and other areas of society. And it's the reason why my question, Seamus, is really specific. And it is that for these life-threatening conditions, which you cannot expect, heart attacks, strokes, whatever, are we being treated as quickly this year as we were last year?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
I think, and again, you know, last thing I want to say, Stephen, is that much of the debate around patients waiting in the emergency department and, for example, having to be placed on a corridor bed on occasions, really is about the patient experience. It's not a good experience for our patients. Let's be very clear, we have a whole range of quality indicators in our emergency department, and those indicators are actually better this winter than they were last winter, and that's a very important message I need to leave you with. The quality of care is no worse, and in fact is better within our emergency department this year than it was last year. So,
do you need Stormont to do anything very quickly? Do you need something to happen very quickly?
Yes, we need things to happen very quickly, but again, if somebody gave me £1 million in the morning, Stephen, it will take some time to get that capacity in place. Yes, we could certainly do with more funding. There's no doubt about that. The whole system could do with more funding. But there is a little bit of a time lag in terms of even investment and when you can actually produce the capacity that's required to meet that demand. And
okay.
I think that's the position that we're in this year. As I say, it has been unprecedented. We normally experience 2 to 3% increase in demand. This year's been 15, and I think our team have done fantastically well to actually put in place over 50% of that capacity in a very timely fashion.
Really,
we're struggling at the moment just to get the rest of the capacity in place, but we will leave no stone unturned, I can assure you.
Really appreciate you coming on, sir.
Okay,
thank
Steve.
You.